This is a podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum. For further information, please go to www.rafmuseum.org/podcasts.
The Supermarine Spitfire is one of the most famous fighter aircraft in the world, a sleek and beautiful flying machine, an aircraft which was already something of a legend, even at the time when young men and women flew it during the Second World War. The Spitfire was not just part of the defence of Britain, it was a symbol of the battle. In the late 20s and early 30s, the Supermarine Aircraft Company was famous for its seaplanes, which had won the Schneider Trophy for air racing three times in a row, in 1927 in the S5, 1929 in the S6, and 1931 in the S6B. Supermarine designer Reginald Mitchell, who had designed these seaplanes, submitted a plan for a new fighter aircraft which had been requested by the Air Ministry. The Supermarine 224 was not a success, but Mitchell's own design for a better aircraft based on the racing trophy winners was eventually accepted, and this new aircraft became the Spitfire. These aircraft and the engines that powered them were developed in an age where aviation was seen as the latest thing. Aviators like Charles Lindbergh, Amelia Earhart and Amy Johnson were the celebrities of their day. Their pursuits were dangerous and unprecedented. And it was this spirit of the age which captured the imagination of many who would go on to fly in the Royal Air Force. The aircraft's performance, with a top speed of nearly 350 miles per hour, exceeded the Air Ministry's requirements. This high level of performance was a result of Mitchell's elliptical wing, which had been adapted from the original design to include 8.303 caliber machine guns. It is the shape of the Spitfire's wing that makes it such a recognisable aeroplane. Another iconic feature, which also improved performance, was the engine, the Rolls-Royce Merlin. The Merlin had been developed, like the Spitfire, from the engine of the Schneider-winning S6. Rolls-Royce initially developed it as a private venture, but eventually the Air Ministry provided funding. The Merlin also powered the Avro Lancaster, and so has become associated with the most famous British fighter and bomber. But some later variants of the Spitfire were powered by Rolls-Royce Griffins, and as the Merlin and Griffin were developed and improved, the Spitfire would be developed to accommodate improved performance. Its weapons were upgraded, with some marks carrying 20mm cannons and bombs. But even legendary aircraft are still machines which require testing and refining. The Spitfire prototype K5054 made its first flight at Eastleigh on the 5th of March 1936, flown by Mutt Summers. Supermarine test pilot Geoffrey Quill's first flight was on the 26th of March of the same year, and his comment was, "Here is a real lady." The name Spitfire was proposed by Sir Robert McLean and supported by the air staff. The aircraft had been previously known as the Supermarine Fighter. R.J. Mitchell's response to the new name was that it was the sort of bloody silly name they would give it. The importance of the test flying became evident even before the Spitfire could be passed to the RAF's Aeroplane and Armament Experimental Establishment at Martlesham Heath. Performance figures showed that the aircraft was only achieving about 335 miles per hour in level flight, which was well short of the planned 350 miles an hour quoted by Mitchell. Unless the speed could be raised, the Air Ministry would certainly not order the aircraft, as the speed over the Hurricane would be minimal and the manufacturing costs of the Hawker product were considerably lower. The speed problem was eventually solved by replacing the wooden two-blade fixed-pitch propellers with a three-bladed variable-pitch prop, which allowed the angle of the propeller biting the air to change according to the demands of the engine and the flight profile. Another issue that would remain with the Spitfire throughout its life was longitudinal instability. The centre of gravity of an object is the average location of the object's weight, and this is a crucial factor in the design of an aircraft. Aircraft are symmetrical, so the centre of gravity is always on the line of symmetry. But since aircraft are not completely solid objects, the tail section of a Spitfire, for instance, is hollow, their mass is not evenly distributed, which makes the calculation of the centre of gravity of an aeroplane very complex. Quill found that the range of the centre of gravity was very small, and that unless the Spitfire was properly weighted, it would become unstable. With these issues resolved, the prototype was released to the Aircraft and Armaments Experimental Establishment on the 26th of May. The Air Ministry immediately ordered Flight Lieutenant J.H. Edwards-Jones to fly and assess the aircraft. On this one flight, Edwards-Jones had to give his opinion over the phone on whether the Spitfire could be operated safely by normal service pilots, and his answer was in the affirmative. This was very unusual, since normally assessment would take several weeks and require reports on all aspects of performance and handling. The reason for the urgency was that an order was needed to be made quickly so that the aircraft could be produced and into service as war loomed. An order for 310 was placed on the 3rd of June. It would be Edwards-Jones who would display K-5054 at its Hendon Airshow debut on the 27th of June 1936. Geoffrey Quill's role as test pilot, as defined by Mitchell, was that he should interpret pilots' problems to them and vice versa. Between 1936 and 1937, trials were conducted into spinning with a tail parachute fitted. This was because model tests had shown that the Spitfire's aerodynamic shape would not be recoverable from a spin. However, during the tests, inducing stall tests, Quill found that the aircraft, apart from longitudinal pitching because of the centre of gravity, recovered normally from spinning. Also during this period, there were trials to reduce drag by using split peas to simulate round head riveting on production aircraft, and methods of heating guns at altitude to prevent stoppages. Product testing by a company had not played such a significant part in the development of aircraft until it was made an extensive part of the Spitfire's development, and Geoffrey Quill contributed most to this process. Quill and Pickering devised a schedule of tests for the Spitfire production aircraft, with scope for expansion as the aircraft develop. This would cover functional tests, basic performance, and handling at different heights and speeds. All production aircraft were checked against a common standard, which would show that it met performance and safety standards prior to being delivered to the customer. This initiative led to some pressure from the production department, as they wished that aircraft, once completed, were delivered to the customer with as few modifications arising from test flights as possible. This was to keep in line with the company and government schedules of deliveries, which became ever more urgent leading up to and during the war. The first production Spitfire Mark I, K9787, was flown by Geoffrey Quill on the 15th of May 1938, but the production schedule fell behind due to the use of subcontractors for wing assembly as required by the Air Ministry. Supermarine managed to catch up by March 1939, and by September, 308 Spitfires had been delivered. Almost a year later, the figure was 1,000. In June, Geoffrey Quill made 35 flights in K9787, covering trials for handling, stability, cooling suitability, determination of acceptable centre of gravity limits, performance, spinning, and dives to 470 miles per hour. These high-speed dives showed that lateral control became very heavy compared with the prototype, but this was due to the far higher speeds attained in production aircraft. Quill delivered the first Spitfire to enter RAF service on the 4th of August 1938 to No. 19 Squadron at RAF Duxford. During 1939, Quill and Pickering tested modifications that had been learnt from the Mark I, which would become standard on the Mark II, such as different designs of propellers and radiators. Between December 1938 and January 1939, Supermarine decided to make an attempt on the land-based aeroplane speed record using a modified Spitfire. Although it included many items which would be impractical on production aircraft, it did illustrate the enormous growth potential of the airframe and engine. It can be argued that Spitfire development was led by improvements in performance gained by Rolls-Royce with the Merlin and Griffin. These early speed trials showed that the Spitfire could be developed much further and be much more economical than designing a whole new fighter. As Quill commented, So, from some unspecified and unidentifiable date, either just before or just after the outbreak of war, Supermarine became committed to the proposition that the Spitfire would be kept one jump ahead of the enemy for as long as possible and as long as could be foreseen. No directive was issued, no statement of intent was ever made, nobody knew what the future would hold, but all of us in Supermarine knew what we had to do. The outbreak of war had a number of effects on the development of the Spitfire. Firstly, Alex Henshaw joined the flight testing team at Eastleigh. His work mainly involved development and production tests on the Spitfire and the Walrus. Henshaw's capabilities were soon recognised by Quill in his ability to test the aircraft in weather conditions that would have grounded most pilots. This level of ability was rewarded when Supermarine chose him to become chief test pilot of the Castle Bromwich aeroplane factory in July 1940. During the Battle of Britain, Geoffrey Quill asked to be embedded in a Spitfire squadron in order to get a first-hand experience of fighting the aircraft and how it could be improved. He was posted to 65 Squadron on the 5th of August 1940. Quill summarised his experiences of air combat in a report submitted to Supermarine, detailing a list of improvements which would assist pilots. They included fitting optically true glass in the side panels and bulging of the canopy, which helped pilots identify hostile aircraft at greater ranges and improved downward vision. Finding a solution to the Merlin cutting out in negative G, a bullet counter, de-icing and cleaning off oil deposits on the canopy were some of the other issues Quill raised. The use of cannons as standard on the Spitfire increased the firepower of the aircraft compared with machine guns. Above all of these was the need to improve lateral control of the aircraft while in high-speed dives. It is a testament to Quill's tenacity and influence that all of these issues were addressed, with the exception of the bullet counter, in the Spitfire's development. The Supermarine works at Southampton were attacked and destroyed on the 19th of September 1940, so production and test flying was dispersed to avoid further attacks. Quill formed a separate experimental flight testing department at Worthy Down, which came under the control of the design rather than the production management. The ability of the test pilot to cooperate with the designers to overcome technical difficulties, the formulation of a proper test flying schedule for production aircraft, and the interpretation of actual combat experiences were crucial to the success of the Spitfire. The Castle Bromwich Aeroplane Factory near Birmingham was a joint venture between the Air Ministry and Lord Nuffield of Morris Motors, which began in 1938. The aim was to mass produce aircraft in the same way as cars, so that if war broke out, the RAF would have sufficient numbers of aircraft to counter the ever-growing Luftwaffe forces. The Castle Bromwich facility would be the largest individual factory producing the Spitfire, with a total of more than 11,500 coming off the production line. At its peak in June 1944, some 320 Spitfires could be produced in a month, and each one needed to be tested in order that they could be ferried eventually to operational squadrons. The weather would also play a crucial part in the ability to test fly the aircraft, as the Nuffield organisation chose the Birmingham site with concern for an adequate supply of labour rather than conditions suitable for flying operations. The airfield had no blind flying aid to navigation, and therefore it relied purely on the pilot's skill to operate in such conditions. Both production and test fly were disrupted by German bombing, especially as the factory was located close to other high-value targets, such as the Fort Dunlop rubber tyre factory. Alex Henshaw was chief test pilot at Castle Bromwich for the whole of the war. He had not been trained by the Royal Air Force or served any kind of flight testing apprenticeship prior to the war. His experiences of flying had been gained in civil aviation, racing and record-breaking. At Castle Bromwich, Henshaw was entirely responsible for the flight testing programme, which included managing the service pilots who were posted to him during the course of the war. As the test pilot who flew around 3,000 Spitfires, he inevitably suffered more technical failures than other pilots. Another aspect of Henshaw's job was displaying the Spitfire for various events and VIP visits to the factory. Although he felt they distracted away from the core tasks of testing the production aircraft, They served as useful demonstrations to the Allies of Britain's industrial capabilities. There were a number of technical difficulties with the Spitfire during wartime production. The first was skew gear failure, where a problem within the engine could cause it to stop suddenly without warning. In most cases, the pilot could glide to a suitable landing area with wheels down, and no further damage would be sustained. There are also issues with the propeller, which could cause the engine to stall. The issue of the Spitfire centre of gravity loading became a problem again when a test pilot was killed when his aircraft broke up during a test dive on the 23rd of October 1942. The last major technical incident occurred on the 12th of October 1943, whilst Henshaw was test diving Spitfire MJ190. Part of the engine failed and the aircraft began to disintegrate, forcing him to bail out. The parachute was severely damaged and led to anxious moments before reaching the ground. Apart from the production test flying, Alex Henshaw and his team also carried out development testing on various modifications to the Spitfire. One example was the trials with metal ailerons at Worthy Down in November 1940. This cured the lateral control problems in high-speed dives that had been encountered earlier. Addition of a 170-gallon Boulton Pool drop tank extended the Spitfire's range when flying to places such as Malta. Handling trials in February 1944 at Worthy Down on the Mark 21 with a redesigned wing represented a significant development in the Spitfire's evolution. Along with specific trials, Henshaw would often be asked to try out the latest mark of Spitfire at Worthy Down or offer Quill a second opinion if there was a problem not easily identified. Flight testing made a big impact on the fighting capability of the Spitfire and therefore to the Allied contribution to the war. Without the modifications made to the early marks of Spitfire, it would not have been able to make the decisive intervention alongside the Hurricane in the Battle of Britain. However, the flight testing did not end in 1940, and it was due to test pilots such as Quill and Henshaw that the Spitfire breed improved throughout the conflict. The work of the production test pilots ensured that squadrons in all theatres throughout the world received working replacements and the latest marks in order to achieve their military objectives.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the Royal Air Force Museum.